Hey, it's Zach Lowe, host of the Lowe Post Podcast. Wake up to the best story you'll hear all day, 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN as told by the top reporters and insiders on the planet. The breaking news of SportsCenter with the deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode was one I thought you would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
We know when the trade deadline is. Don't y'all got a ticker countdown to trade deadline? I got traded from Toronto to New York on the same day the teams played each other. I woke up in Toronto and flew home with the Knicks.
That was Jalen Rose talking about the annual rite of passage when the Woj bombs drop like rain and the entire NBA universe refreshes Twitter over and over. It's a waiting game until Thursday afternoon when the clock runs out on the trade deadline. Today, Zach Lowe walks us through who could be buying and who might be selling and what it means for the playoff picture. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, February 4th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Zach, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Zach Lowe is an ESPN senior writer and the host of the Lowe Post podcast. So Zach, the Super Bowl is over, which means all eyes are turning to the NBA and, of course, the trade deadline, which is barreling towards us. Before we get started, what does this week look like for you?
As a human being?
As a human being who covers the sport of basketball.
There's just a strange sort of ever-present tension hovering over life. Like every time the phone beeps, you don't know what it's going to be. Is it a text that's giving you information? Is it Woj tweeting? Is it something else? Like, I have trouble focusing on anything to the detriment of literally everything else in my life, including games, my daughter, my wife. You're unbalanced until Thursday at whatever PM, and then you can unload a little bit.
Are you ever expecting a big trade, perhaps on the morning of the deadline, and your phone's blowing up, and you're nervous, and you look down, and it's like a text from your wife saying, go get more milk?
Oh, for sure. Last night I was giving my daughter a bath and I felt my phone buzz and I was like, well, I just don't want to be the guy looking at his phone while his daughter is playing bubble bath games. I'm going to risk it. Then for the next 15 minutes, all I could think about was what buzzed? What is it? And it was Ramona retweeting something Katie Couric said about the Super Bowl, maybe. And I was like, well, see, I was just fretting for nothing important to the NBA. Like, not nothing, but that's what it's like.
Well, some news did drop on the night of the Super Bowl. Because, Zach, while Patrick Mahomes was throwing bombs, our colleague Woj was dropping them online. You probably saw that one coming a mile away. He tweeted that the Rockets were interested in moving their center, Clint Capella, and the Hawks might be intrigued by him. And then yesterday he reported that the Celtics have interest as well. What do you make of all this?
The Rockets, like, have just had this on-again, off-again Capella wanderlust. Like, it's very interesting because Capella is good and they need Capella or someone like Capella because their defense is not very good and their rebounding is worse than not very good. And so their willingness to trade him, I think, evinces a very Daryl Morey mindset, my guess anyway, that, you know, like centers who can't shoot are pretty replaceable. And I could bring in a bunch of dudes in here who can screen for James Harden and roll to the rim and dunk and block some shots and all that. Like, I don't need to spend $19 million on Clint Capella if I can get a good player at a different position and then fill that Capella thing with like center X, Y, and Z, my team is probably going to be better. We're all in for right now. Like, we've traded a bunch of picks. The question is, like, can they find that guy?
Zach, generally you can tell around this time of year which teams are going to be buyers and which teams will be sellers by looking at who's in playoff contention. The problem is there's a lot of teams in playoff contention right now. There's great parity in the post-Warriors dynasty in the NBA. Does that make it harder for you to predict who's going to be involved in big trades?
A little bit. And not only that, some of the teams that are out of contention, and the Hawks are one of those teams. I think the Knicks are another one. Washington, Chicago, like, I think for teams that are out of contention, they're under some pressure to like show some signs of life now or be good next year or both. And so if you're under those kinds of pressures, you don't necessarily want to sell off your good players now. And in the West, I mean, really, you could argue that everyone but Minnesota and Golden State is still kind of in the playoff race, although Sacramento is in peril of falling too far back. So it is a little bit of a weird year.
Zach, two teams that are very obviously in contention that you mentioned as possible buyers are Denver and Miami. What sort of pieces do you think they need to add going into the playoffs?
I think they're just sort of generally one guy away from being like truly, truly dangerous. And I think both teams are aware of that and would like to make something happen. They've both been linked to Drew Holiday, which makes sense. Drew Holiday is really good. Everybody can use wings. For Miami, I've kind of liked the idea of them getting a stretch four instead. Like, I think Gallinari would fit really, really well there, but he's more of a rental. He's a little older. I can see why maybe there's not as much juice there for them. Drew's a good fit on both teams. I think both teams are probably asking themselves, is he a top 25 player in the NBA? Is he a top 40 player in the NBA? Is he like better than Chris Middleton? Like, is he really the guy? Is he the guy to go all in for? And if he's the guy to only go like half in for, then I wonder if New Orleans is just like, well, half in is just, it's just not worth it to us. Like, we like him. He's our leader. We're going to be good next year once we get Zion fully integrated and all of that. So it's a weird little dance.
A team I'm intrigued by is the Philadelphia 76ers, who came into the season as, you know, a favorite to win the East. But I think they're a lower seed right now than people probably would have predicted. And while Tobias Harris and Al Horford have both played well, it's still unclear whether any of these players, including Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, should even be on the same team. Do you think there's any chance they make a big move ahead of the deadline?
Well, you can never say there's no chance, but I think there's not much of a chance that they move any of their starters. So that's Harris, Horford, Embiid, Jay Rich, and Ben Simmons, or Matisse Thybulle, who everyone and their brother wants because he's good and young and can, you know, defend like seven people at once. Part of the reason I didn't mention them much is I think they're going to do the obvious thing, which is try to package their little fringe stuff and see if they can get a little upgrade, a guy that can shoot and come off the bench and all that. But if they, like you said, they're sixth. I picked them to make the finals. So I'm not surprised that they're scuffling a little bit. I think what's really happened is that Indiana, Miami, Boston, and Toronto are all better than people thought they were going to be. So like, oh yeah, Philly matches up really well with Milwaukee. Well, maybe that's still true. They've looked good against them in the regular season, but like the road to that series is fraught for them. I think the discussion changes if they lose in the first round or the second round in a very demoralizing way. I think the summer gets a little interesting.
I'm glad you brought up Toronto, who really we should bring up a lot more around here. Last year had the deadline. They made a move in acquiring Marc Gasol that, you know, really helped in their run to the championship. Do you think there's anything they might do this season, given that really they're a lot better than people expected?
They are the best story of the whole season. Full stop. They're on pace for 59 wins. They won 58 last year. They won 11 in a row. And they're on pace for all those wins despite almost literally every important player on their team missing a non-trivial amount of time with injury. It's crazy how good they've been. Before the season, everyone was like, well, if they're fifth or sixth, you know, maybe Kyle Lowry's available. Now it's like they're second with a bullet, and they have some expiring contracts. They have all their picks. They have Norman Powell, who has 2 years left on his deal and was playing his butt off before his injury over the weekend. They have a lot of stuff to do. The problem is all those expiring contracts are good players who they need, one of whom is Fred VanVleet, is a free agent, and they're probably a little worried about how much he's going to make in this summer, but he's good. I don't know who the guy is that they're really going for. I don't know who the Gasol is that really tips their team over the edge. And beyond Drew Holiday, who would fit there, I'm not sure who the guy is where they're like, okay, let's throw some serious chips in.
Is Holiday really the biggest fish out there right now?
I haven't been able to find a bigger one. I mean, there are big names like Andre Drummond, Kevin Love, but there's not much juice around those guys. I mean, certainly there's super amounts of attention to everything the Lakers do. So if there is a Kyle Kuzma thing, like that will be a big deal. I think Gallinari is one of the most underrated players in the league. That's one to watch. You know, there's been no noise about the Spurs veterans, LaMarcus and DeMar DeRozan. The name that really would have been dominating the league this year is Bradley Beal. And that extension took him off the market. He literally is not allowed to be traded right now. I guess you could argue D'Angelo Russell is a big kind of high wattage name. So maybe that one. I don't know. It's kind of like there's always something that comes out of left field day of or 2 days before. We're like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. I just don't know what that is because I don't see it coming.
One more good team I want to ask you about is the Clippers. And it's hard at times, I think, to tell how good they are since they don't really seem to be trying during the regular season, but they're obviously championship contenders. And after this year's draft, they can't trade a first round pick until after 2021. Do you think they might be motivated to make a move now?
I think they are among the most motivated teams in the league, because when you have, when you've traded all you've traded for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and you're really, really good, really good. They may still be the best team in the league as a playoff team. I mean, PG and Kawhi have only played 19 games together, I think, so their record is a little bit misleading. But you're all in. And those guys are free agents like almost tomorrow. Basically, a season and a half from now, those guys can hit free agency. And they have that pick that is sort of burning a hole in their pocket. They have some contracts that make sense. So I think they're very motivated to make a deal. But again, it will be interesting to see if they can find anybody. They'll find someone. Like, they'll do something. I would be shocked if we got to Thursday at 3 p.m. and the Clippers literally did nothing. It's a matter of, do they find something that's worth their first-round pick and some meaningful stuff, or do they do the sort of fringy, like, some seconds and whatever for a guy who's going to be their eighth man?
After the break, Zach and I talk about the teams ready to sell, the teams wary of selling, the teams trying to buy and sell at the same time, and somehow, fashion. Zach, we've been talking about the teams that could be buyers ahead of the deadline. Who are the very obviously terrible teams that might be looking to move talent, get younger, or acquire draft picks?
I feel so bad saying terrible. No one's really terrible. Everyone in the NBA is a good team.
Not great. Who are the very not great teams?
Golden State, Minnesota. Although Minnesota is in this weird thing where they're sellers and buyers at the same time because they are lusting after D'Angelo Russell as if he's Michael Jordan. Cleveland, Charlotte. Anyone want Marvin Williams? Detroit, kinda. Sacramento is the mystery one to me. Like they have a big free agent in Bogdan Bogdanovic, and they have some pieces that would interest a lot of teams. But those are the ones.
What about a team like New Orleans? You mentioned Drew Holiday is sort of the gem of the options out there right now. But they're not out of contention, and David Griffin, GM, has said they wouldn't be big sellers. Do you think this is the roster they want?
They're really interesting. Like, Lonzo's playing well. Zion is for real. Like, imagine when that guy gets in real shape and figures out how to play in the NBA. Like, that guy's legit. Ingram has not been, like, people thought there would be maybe some hiccups. The fit has been pretty good. And Drew's really good. Drew fits their team. He can play the way they want to play. But that's a lot of dudes who need the ball and a lot of dudes who are between 6 and 8 years or 9 years younger than Drew Holiday. So, like, I think they have to wonder, like, if we trade Drew Holiday for, like, a league-average shooting guard, Gary Harris is the name everyone's going to bring up, so let's just say his name. Like, what is that going to cost us this season over 30 games? Half a win? Like, does it really matter? Next year, if we think Lonzo and Ingram are going to continue their upward trajectory and Zion is going to be a superstar, like, is it really costing us to downgrade a little bit from Drew Holiday to a couple of secondary pieces that maybe need the ball a little bit less? It feels kind of, like, we anointed him our captain, our guy, our leader. But, like, if those guys are all legitimately this good, is it really costing us that much? I think that's a really interesting discussion for them.
Well, sometimes teams don't sell because they're bad or not great, as we characterized it, or because their timeline is different, but because of their immediate needs and the way players fit on their roster. Is that the case with the Lakers and Kyle Kuzma?
I think the Lakers just have very little else to sell, right? I mean, they've sold all their draft picks. They're pretty bereft of young assets. And some of the guys they could trade have veto rights because of complicated salary cap rules that are boring. And so you're left with Kuzma plus salary to actually get somebody, because Kuzma makes relatively little by NBA standards. His fit, it's not great. Like, he's kind of a power forward. LeBron's kind of a power forward. AD kind of insists on playing power forward. Frank Vogel has experimented with all kinds of lineups to try and get him in, like big lineups, small lineups, gigantic lineups. On the other hand, like, if he can make enough open jumpers, I think we're worrying a little bit too much about the fit. And if the Lakers deal him, they just got nothing in the cupboard for, like, when LeBron is out of the league and AD is 32. Like, they just got nothing. So I think if I'm them, I have to be really, really careful about trading Kuzma.
When we look at the trade market, we have to think not only about the present tense, who wants to compete, what assets they have, but also the future. How does the draft class and the upcoming free agent class impact teams' willingness to make moves?
The free agent class is a big one. The draft class is, you know, I think it's very guard heavy. So depending on your roster, or at least the top of the draft is, depending on your roster and your needs, that could certainly impact it. Free agency is the more interesting one because there's not a lot of cap space this summer. Most of the teams that have cap space are bad. So that impacts both teams that are trying to trade players and teams that are interested in trading for players. But that landscape is always important. Teams are always thinking one, two, three years ahead.
In recent years, players have gotten in on the rumor mill, you know, trolling us with, well, who could forget the great NBA emoji cycle of 2017. How has the circus around this week changed since you first started covering the league?
It's continuous now. It's continuous all season long. Everyone is much more cognizant of all the dates, right? Like December 15th, free agents signed over the summer are now trade eligible. And there's always stuff that happens around that date. January 15th, the rest of the free agents that signed over the summer because they made so much money, they're now eligible to be traded. So it's just sort of always hovering. And Twitter has made it so just like everything is a scoop. Every rumor, every phone call, everything can be a scoop. And it's just nonstop.
Zach, one team that I'm extremely confused by because, well, they're a lot better than everyone thought they would be, but I don't know if they're buyers or sellers, is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I want them to be buyers, Mina. They're 30-20. They're two games out of fifth in the West. First of all, they have 9,000 draft picks. They have more draft picks than they could ever actually draft. I mean, can't they just use one and like get a real actual wing to play these minutes that are being played by Terrence Ferguson and Deontay Burton and Luguentz Dort and all these guys who are totally anonymous? You think the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Rockets, you think any of those teams want to see that team in the first round? However, I don't see that happening. I could be wrong. The Thunder are very hard to predict. They play their cards close to the vest. Does anyone actually wear vests anymore? Like, there's no one's playing cards with a vest on. I just think they're so cold and calculating that if they got a really good offer for one of their Gallinari, Dennis Schroeder, whoever, Steven Adams guys, I think it'd have to be really good because it is a feather in their cap. Like, they lost Paul George and Russell Westbrook, and they're really good, and they're going to make the playoffs. Like, winning a playoff series, that's a real huge accomplishment.
Old Korean men wear vests, ajashis. Once you turn 65, you're basically issued. It's like a utility vest that's sort of mesh with many, many pockets. If you ever go to Korea, every single old man wears that vest.
I don't have one vest. I don't own a vest.
I could see you wearing one of those.
I think I have a fleece vest. I think I might have one fleece vest that I got at like a conference 10 years ago or something.
I have one other question, and you can ignore this one if you want.
Is it about fashion? I really hope it is.
What would be your dream trade ahead of the deadline? Not saying you think it's going to happen. I just want to know what you would love to see.
Ooh, I like that. Okay, I have a couple. I want Miami to get a stretch power forward. So I'll just say Danilo Gallinari. Just someone as good as that who can shoot threes and play power forward. I want Miami to get that guy so that when they're going down the stretch with Bam at center, instead of Derrick Jones Jr., who's really good but can't shoot, or James Johnson, who's kind of unpredictable, they have like someone who, oh my God, I got to honor that guy. I want someone to trade for Aaron Gordon because I'm sick of him being on the Magic. Someone with a clear hole at power forward and a role for Aaron Gordon, please go get Aaron Gordon. I would like also the Knicks to trade Marcus Morris to a contender. That would be fun too. Those are my three.
Thanks so much, Zach.
My pleasure.
Coming up, for one Chiefs player, the Super Bowl was a homecoming. Here's another story I want you to know. This week, you're going to hear a lot about the stars who shone brightly in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce. But there was one player whose story jumped out to me after the game. And it's one you've probably never heard of unless you follow the Chiefs. Rookie cornerback Rashad Fenton. Fenton, who played college football at South Carolina, is the son of Bahamian and Jamaican immigrants. He attended high school in Miami Gardens, which is close to the Liberty City neighborhood we talked about last week. And while he was there, he worked at Miami's Hard Rock Stadium on the weekends, making hot dogs and nachos and passing out peanuts. Despite being a sixth-round pick, he received substantial playing time during the regular season, and in the Super Bowl, he played 30 snaps, both on defense and special teams, racking up a pair of tackles. Fenton told our Cam Wolf before the game that once he was in the stadium for the Super Bowl, he'd take a moment to look up the concourse and search for the concession stand where he used to fill up sodas. Here's what he had to say as the confetti was raining down.
God is good, man. God is great. Anything is possible. I used to work here. Now I won the world champion. How you feel?
I don't think Fenton made it up to the concourse to order any nachos, but I can only imagine how much he enjoyed this moment. Ending up back where he started, but with a very different view. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.